Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I am Mike Lupica, MLB.com and the New York Daily News. And whatever happens today, I don't want anybody to boo us, okay? Because Mitch, you laugh. It hurts our feelings. It hurts our feelings. And we will... Okay. If anybody doesn't know what happened with the Mets yesterday, they actually won a game and they actually scored some runs. But that was not the story. Because why? Why, Mitch and Bob? Because they're the Mets. That's why. Javier Baez, who's a loner, who punched his ticket out of New York yesterday, basically did a thumbs down gesture and wanted the fans to know. This is so dumb. I can't believe we're going to talk about it, but it's actually about fan behavior and player behavior. If you boo us, we're going to boo you right back. And now here we are, the president of the team, Sandy Alderson, had to issue a statement saying his comments were totally unacceptable, that Mets fans are great and they get to do, not whatever they want, but they get to voice their opinions. And so here we are.
Here's a statement, amongst some other stupid statements, that Baez made that kind of sums it up. I love the fans, Baez said. Uh-huh. I like playing for the fans.
Sure.
He's walking back the love to life.
Sure.
But we
sure.
can't have our fans against us. Huh. So this is a really interesting topic to me because it speaks to the nature of what is the relationship between fan and player and player and fan. And when I say fan and player and fan, it's not the same. One gets paid to play. The other pays to view the action. And where I think a lot of athletes get lost is that they somehow think that the fans are also getting paid somehow, you know, like, and their role on the team, just like the role of the catcher is to catch the ball when the pitcher throws it and the outfielder to catch the balls that are hit to the outfield. And the role of the fans is to cheer all the time and go crazy for the home team because we're all getting paid to do that. And what they don't seem to understand, what Baez doesn't seem to understand, is this is entertainment. The minute you accepted a paycheck for doing this instead of just doing it for the love of the sport, you subjected yourself to whatever the audience chooses to do. And if the audience chooses to boo you, as unseemly as it may be, it is part of the agreement, the tacit agreement that you made for being a professional entertainer. Can you imagine if a band came out and played off key and did a lousy version of their song and then became incensed that the crowd didn't clap loud enough for them?
Like the Rock Bottom Remainders, right, Mitch?
Yeah, we basically grovel and say thank you for any noise whatsoever. But yeah, it's like us having an expectation, except we don't get paid. But imagine a concert put on where you paid money to go in, and then the band, after doing a crappy job and a bad version of the song, got mad at you for not being enthusiastic enough for their performance. Isn't this a little bit like that?
Where is the player who understands and thinks like a fan in any form? They have gotten away from it from their adolescence. Most of them have become acclaimed in, you know, beyond our comprehension, particularly in football and basketball, not so much in baseball, which plays under the radar until you get to the major leagues, except in certain places. But we are talking baseball here. Where is the player who understands the nature of a fan?
Derek Jeter got booed rarely. Rarely did he get booed. You know what he said? You know what he said at the time, Bob? I'd boo me too.
Okay, no. So some fans, some guys, where is the player? Some do understand the whole nature of the experience. Everything that Mitch said is true, but what they do expect or acknowledge and certainly nod in silent assent is when they boo the other team. It's when they get booed themselves. We're the home team. How can you turn on us? Well, and 99 times out of 100, it has to do with, if not 100 out of 100, it's about performance. And sometimes it's not just performance, but it's perceived laziness. Nothing in sense of fans who is into this more then the perception that a player isn't trying hard enough. And in this modern game, we got guys that don't run out ground balls, that stand and gawk at fly balls that they think are going out, and they wind up, what's happened with the Red Sox the other day, a guy thought a ball was going out, and he winds up getting thrown out after he rounded first too much, and was thrown out getting back to the bag, and he should have been on second base to start with. And that reserves a boo, but these people can't accommodate, bring themselves to understand why they would deserve a boo.
He's, let's see what he's hitting. He's hitting, he's hitting 210 as a New York Met. Okay?
Due to strikeouts per at-bats, Mike.
And that's Mitch, I know, and I'm thinking...
22 and 62, Mike.
I'm hitting 210, and they're going to boo me, Javi Baez, and Lindor, who's going to be around forever, because he's got one of those forever $300 million contracts. He's sort of backed Baez's play, and there has been no... other than maybe Cody Bellinger, there's been no star who has disappointed more this year than Frankie Lindor, who's back from being hurt now, and he's hitting 224. But the larger issue is you're allowed to think, but Mitch, you're allowed to think what Baez said. You're allowed to think that way, okay?
Right.
But you cannot verbalize it. You cannot verbalize it at a time, oh, by the way, when your team has won 9 out of its last 29 games and been in a free fall after being in first place for 3 months in the NL East. And I'm telling you something. I tweeted something about this morning. Not only does Sandy Alderson, an ex-Marine and a good guy, have to stand in front of these, have a come-to-Jesus meeting with you guys, you know who ought to be there too? The new owner, Steve Cohen, this is a moment for him to do something other than being the funny guy on Twitter about the New York Mets.
Oh, owners should be absolutely. And many, so I've been yelling for years that Kraft should say, Bill, cut the crap. You know, Belichick was an ass again yesterday, when asked about the Newton thing. Cut the crap, you know. But and absolutely, Steve Cohen should be there. But the moral of the story, ultimately, guys, I believe, is simply this. You don't win. You cannot take on the fans. Period.
That is it. And that is
period.
It.
You can't. You don't. That you, is the.
Right.
That's the.
Just as we frequently rail against fans who, will lean over and try to, interfere with play or run onto a court or things like that.
Oh, that's different. Don't go there.
No, but but it's not different, Bob, in that your role as a fan is not to be part of the game.
Okay? I thought you were going to endorse it. I'm sorry. Okay.
No. I'm saying we rail against it, and rightfully so. Your role as a fan is you don't get to be on the court. You are not part of the game as much as you may think you are. You're a fan. Well, it's the same thing. In reverse, in this situation with the players, you cannot, unfortunately, behave like a fan. You can't boo the fans while you're out there. You can't give a thumbs when you win.
God. You're so right, Mitch. You're
you
so
can't.
Right.
These are two different roles, and you need to accept that, unfair as it may feel on both sides, these are the roles you accept when you enter into the arena, when you pay for a ticket or you get a paycheck from the team. And that seems to be what Baez doesn't understand.
Mitch and Bob, it's boneheaded what he did on its merits, but especially a guy who, oh, by the way, is playing for a new contract. He is in his walk year. He's going to
get a new contract with some other team.
Yeah. He's in Palookaville because it's like I said before, he just punched his ticket out of New York City, and all he has done, and you guys know this, he's just made things worse for himself the rest of the way. By the way, he hit a home run yesterday. he hit a home run and helped him win a game. And how does he respond? Oh, I know, by pulling the roof down on top of himself.
Yep. Right. Now, this is not to say that all fan behavior, therefore, is acceptable,
these are just tolerated. Boos. These are just boos.
Right. But straight up booing, it's centuries old at this point. And, I've been fortunate enough to travel and around parts of the world, and I remember going to bullfights in Spain. All right. And in a bullfight, it's very, very clear what is success and what is failure. If you do not kill the bull on the first try, you're already in mediocreville. If you do not kill the bull on the second try, you are a loser. The matador accepts this going in. He knows what is expected. If you kill the bull on the first thing, the crowd will roar for you. If you miss and you go to the second one, there'll be a mixture of boos and all right, well, at least you got it done on the second one. And if you it takes you three tries, you will be vilified. And it's an accepted, you never see a bullfighter like give the finger to the fans. It's just, that is the way it is. And why certain players can't understand.
And if the bull's going for him, Mitch, and if the bull's going for him at that point, don't you think it's a bit counterintuitive
right,
for him to be worrying right. about the fans right. and not the bull?
Exactly. And maybe that's why they can focus on it a little bit better. But there is a tacit understanding of the relationship between the crowd and the athlete in that case. And matadors are athletes. And so I don't know why it's so hard for players here, but it comes from, Mike, as you kind of insinuated a little earlier, Bob. You know, when you get lauded and accolades and thrown a ton of money when you're a kid and your feet never touch the ground, then, you know, you think that you have the right to also say, well, these fans have to be better, which is what Baez essentially said. I think he may even use those words. They have to be, the fans have to be better. No, actually, at 210, you need to be better.
Yes.
Okay. You need to be better.
Thing. And here's the thing. Okay. And we've all written about this in various forms for years. Fans have very few rights left. Okay. They watch everything spiral out of control. They watch television rule the world. They watch their favorite players move. They watch ticket prices go through the roof. That's the other elephant in the room here. The right. reason that guys like Lindor are making the money they make is because of the fans. Okay. They have so few rights left. Booing happens to be one of them. Not being vile, not being the guy in your section that used to make me move sometimes when I brought my boys to the game when they were little. Not that guy, okay? But if it's only booing, guess what? Suck it up, Baez, because it's going to continue now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The extension of all this is, okay, then we drop to the next level. Is it acceptable to boo collegians? You know, that... because that's another matter entirely, right?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question, an interesting distinction, because although Bob, now that the collegians may be making $1 million on, you know, going out in commercials, don't think that that's not going to start leading into
Thank
it.
Thank you.
When the quarterback starts stinking up the place, everyone says, man, you know, why don't you spend a little less time making commercials and a little bit more time working on your game? Money
totally
does that.
Agree. I mean,
hey,
this...
by the way, Al McGuire used to do a very funny bit about how watching golf on television, and we're going to get to golf in a minute, but he'd say, he'd listen to the announcer saying, he's got a 2-foot putt now to win. And he says, whereas in our sport, I got people behind the basket doing everything except shaking the basket when my 19-year-old kid is trying to make a free throw. And if he misses, they say he choked.
It's very true. I was going to get to that when we get to the next topic.
But your point about the difference between collegians, yeah. you know, therefore those being paid and those not, I do think that money is a dividing factor.
Yes.
I mean, but
yes.
people do pay money to go into college games and to get college tickets, but that's a relationship between them and the school who's keeping all the money. And I think there was always sort of this unwritten, accepted, well, the players... You know, the players aren't getting any of the money that I'm paying for these tickets, and not directly anyhow. I mean, they're getting the scholarships and things like that. So, you know, I got to lay off in terms of Boone and their kids.
The kids.
But now when you start seeing them, you know, hawking goods and doing commercials, some of that
may go
away.
It's going to be interesting. The fallout from this is obviously the law of unintended consequence will come into play heavily with this whole image and likeness thing. And I can assure you that it won't all be positive at all. And that's a topic we can...
Now, a parallel to this took place in the world of golf. And Mike, I'd love for you to take us into this because you watched the whole thing. But before we do, a word from our good friends at Geico. Hey, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it could be hard work. But you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing because you already have so much to do around your home. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All right, Mitch, there's two things. Obviously, there was an epic golf playoff, and really it was a showdown that lasted the entire round because Patrick Cantlay and Bryson DeChambeau had separated themselves from the field, and it looked like they were both going at one point going to shoot 30 under par for the tournament. It was just an extraordinary game of one-on-one basketball, okay, that ends up with, and we'll get to this, Cantlay, now known as Patty Ice, by the way, it's so cool because that's what they were yelling at him yesterday, making putt after putt when it was match point against him, essentially, okay? He always seemed to be putting second. He always had to make a putt until he won the win. Okay. But this thing that's going on with Bryson DeChambeau, and guys, I will freely admit, I find him extremely difficult to root for, okay? And Mitch, there was a moment on the 14th hole, I'm sure you've read about it, and I was watching live, where DeChambeau is getting ready to hit, and he looks over his shoulder, and he said, "Patrick, please stop walking." Okay. Now, Cantlay said they've been told to speed it up, and he was just trying to get down the fairway, and DeChambeau's back was basically to him. Okay. All you do if you're DeChambeau in that moment is step away from the ball, but he cannot get out of his own way. Okay. And Paul Azenier made a big thing about this and went on and on, but this was another day, guys, where the Brooksy chants, the Brooksy calls, cat calls were coming out of the gallery for Bryson DeChambeau. It's Brooks Koepka fans. It started. We don't need to go down that rabbit hole. But to get under DeChambeau's skin, they call him Brooksy now. Okay? They call him Brooksy. And this goes on to the point where...
Brooks Koepka.
Yeah. And this goes on to the point, guys, where after the match, and Kevin Van Valkenburgh has a great piece about the whole thing and the whole dynamic between the galleries and DeChambeau now on ESPN.com. After it was over, somebody yelled Brooksy after this crushing defeat, after DeChambeau had like four times had chances to make putts to win the golf tournament, okay? And DeChambeau blew his top but had the presence of mind to just go and call security. And at some point, this has to stop because it's one thing to be rooting for Cantlay yesterday because he became like a rock star in one afternoon, but it's quite another to see, and by the way, these are golf galleries who, you know, with the Yahoos going, get the hole, you know, all that crap. But it, at some point, it has to stop because, guys, there's a Ryder Cup coming up. And that, you know, you can always hear me talk about Stupidville in sports, okay? Imagine what's going to happen there.
Well, I'm sorry. Okay. This has got so many layers. Let me just start with this, Mike, as the golf historian here. Has there been anything remotely comparable to this circumstance we are faced with an official villain on the PGA Tour? And I will include the brief temporary, and you've never remembered a PGA Tour, but the brief late 90s Colin Montgomery scenario in which I was front and center for two.
People didn't love Jack Nicklaus. They were rooting for Arnold and against Jack.
But not
Jack
like
back.
This.
No, but it's a different world. All I'm saying
totally
is
different.
There have been various kinds of villains.
Nothing
not like
to this degree.
Kid. No,
the,
not like
the,
this.
The kid. Last one that he wasn't, and it wasn't to this degree, but he was an unrootable and not popular among the cognates, you know, was Vijay Singh in his prime. He wasn't likable. He was prickly, but nothing like this. This guy, you said it earlier. He's brought it all on himself. And my
Koepka
about him
didn't
is,
help though, Bob. Koepka did not help. Okay.
No,
he egged them on. He did egg them on.
Well, okay. All right. Well, he's here now, and he won't get. You're right. He won't get out of his own way. Can't bleep him. I know. I didn't see it in real time, Mike. I wish I had known. I was unavailable. I could not watch the golf yesterday. I watched the highlights this morning. Every one of those putts that missed, I was cheering madly. I want him. I can't stand him. I actively root against him. I pick up the paper every tournament now, not to see where he is, hoping the first digit's an eight. And I'm sorry. He has put himself in this position. He doesn't seem to be making any steps to extricate himself from this position. The hell with him. That's what I think.
Well, it's really interesting to hear you. I'm trying to listen to your words and imagining them. Who else would inspire this kind of reaction in golf? And you're right, there haven't been a lot of people, but I will throw a name out that maybe nobody's thinking along these lines, and that is Tiger Woods. The only passionate rooting against that I have seen in golf that even holds a candle to this, and it's not the same,
but are people who root against Tiger Woods. There are a lot of people who, went not now so much, he's become much more sympathetic with his injuries and his failures and things like that. But
and
when he was at
Masters,
his...
And winning you know, the Masters.
Yeah, but when he was at... Right, winning the Masters. But when he was at his prime, and then just after the, whole thing in the driveway and the, you know, his wife and all that stuff, there were plenty of people who did exactly the same thing, Bob, as you said. I'm rooting for him to miss that putt. I'm rooting for him to have an eight in front of his score. You know, they reveled in it. But the difference was they never took it to the course. Okay, on the actual course,
or made it personal, or made it personal, Mitch.
Or yeah, they sat at home and said miss, and you know, that's every fan's right or every viewer's right to do that. But this stuff, I don't like Bryson DeChambeau's behavior. I don't like the way he always seems to bristle. He's a bad loser, and he didn't even remember that time when he's yelling at a cameraman for filming him because he wasn't doing well
and
on the hole.
And blaming his equipment company and firing his caddy. Okay,
and then telling the cameraman you're hurting my brand.
And Mitch, I didn't even get to the fact that he wouldn't talk to the media afterwards yesterday. You know, he brings it on himself.
He brings it on himself. But there has been a shift in golf fan over recent years that has moved it more towards the WWE than
yes.
traditional golf.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And it's not cute, and it's in the whole crowd. It's so old and past, and now they're moving on to a new thing. And honestly, that would get under my skin too. If I had a rival, because golf is very much about, you know, like you said, Jack and Arnie, and they're the guys that you have, you know, Tiger and Phil, and they're the guys that sort of shadow your career, and you know you're kind of up against them for the big moments when you're that good at that level. And Bryson DeChambeau is that good. He's not Tiger good, but he's pretty damn good. And if people started yelling at me with my rival's name, yeah, that's over the line. We talked about booing in baseball versus making it personal. I remember talking to Kirk Gibson once, who got into it with some fans out in the outfield. And I said, you know, what do you do? He said, look, let me tell you what they were yelling. And then you tell me what you would do. And he told me what they were yelling. It had to do with his wife and what they would do to his wife if they were alone with his wife. And you could let your imagination go with it. And yeah, you know, by the time I was done with that discussion, I said, I wouldn't put up with that either. And in this case, when you're being called by your rival's name, I don't think I would put up with it either. I don't know. That is not something I will defend a fan has a right to do, especially this chicken crap fan who yelled, apparently, if you read the ESPN piece, as DeChambeau was leaving and was walking out, he waited until he walked past him while he was gone. Of course, you know, courageous fan that he is, and then yelled it so that you couldn't figure out who it was. But he did. And he spun around and he said, get the bleep out of here. And then the security guys got involved with that. But, you know, I don't blame him for that reaction.
I honestly think that it sounds silly that you would have to legislate or mitigate against this. But I just think the guys that yell that now, okay, which it's a small percentage of them, okay? Bounce them. Your ticket, you have, we're getting back to bias now. You have a lot of rights for your ticket, but this is line crossing. Okay. And again, I'm going to put this on Brooks Koepka because he's kind of told everybody to stand down. No, he has to issue a powerful statement and say, stop doing this. He's going to be my teammate at the Ryder Cup. Okay. I hope they put the two of them together at the Ryder Cup and make them work this out on the golf course against the European side. Okay.
That would be interesting.
You bet it would. I hope DeChambeau and Patrick Cantlay. And so anyway, this isn't going to change, but he's got to change a little and make himself more welcoming. Okay. This was an opportunity for him yesterday to they always said this about Jack Nicklaus. Okay. Who won 18 majors and finished second 19 times in majors. And Dan Jack has always said he was an even better loser than he was a winner. Okay. And you, people find out about you. And guys, again, I watched every stroke of this down the stretch, okay? And I'm hearing from all of my friends in and out of who are golf fans or not. This was an awesome game of one-on-one. yesterday, okay? And it became such compelling sports theater. And now we ought to talk about that, because Patrick Cantlay did become a bit of a rock star yesterday by finishing off one of the greatest putting weeks I've ever seen. But Mitch, again and again, he's always hitting second, because DeChambeau on the par fours in the playoff, they kept playing 18 over and over again before they went to 17, the par three. He's 40 yards behind him. He's hitting a 6-iron when DeChambeau's hitting a pitching wedge. On the par three, DeChambeau knocks it like 5 feet. Cantlay steps up and knocks it 2 feet. It was that kind of theater, and it was Patrick Cantlay who made all the putts, and Bryson DeChambeau, for as far as he can hit it, you still got to put the ball in the hole.
And, you know, it wasn't a major, and it wasn't the Masters. In a different world, in a better world, you would like to think that DeChambeau and Cantlay, they laugh and smile and go, man, what a great game. And, you know, you could see a world of that. You've seen guys who have, you know, tennis matches that have gone on forever. And finally, you know, where the guys go up and they just smile at each other.
Djokovic and Federer a couple years ago at Wimbledon.
We both gave our, but no, you know, that was great. That was great sport. And you won today. I'll win the next one. And you could see a scenario like that. There's no reason it had to end this way. But between the fans and DeChambeau being just a bad loser, instead of talking about, wow, wasn't that the best of sports that we saw there? Not only in the play, but in the sportsmanship at the end of it, it turned into we're talking all about this stuff. And that part is on DeChambeau, because how bad a loser you are is within your own control.
And the one thing about this tournament was, obviously it wasn't a major, but it was a big deal because it was setting the field for the Tour Championship, the 30 players next week. And because Cantlay win, they've concocted this formula, and I don't really love it, but it's impactful as you're playing for $10 million in Atlanta, where Patrick Cantlay now goes with a two shots clear of the second place guy, 3 shots clear of DeChambeau. You know, he starts the tournament at 10 under par. So the stakes were big yesterday. But again, Mitch, it was just sports. They weren't thinking about the stakes. They weren't thinking about the Tour Championship. It was Cantlay against DeChambeau, and DeChambeau was the guy who lost.
Yep. All right, let's shift over to college football here before we do one other word from our good friends at Geico.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
I said college football. I meant to say pro football, although college football
is
coming up.
It's a blend.
Yeah, they're all blending together.
Isn't Trevor really just still kind of a college
coach? You know what? I think subliminally, like, that's why I said that, because I knew we were going to talk about Trevor Lawrence, and I still think of him as a college kid. But he put on a little performance in a meaningless exhibition game. But he did go 11 for 12 for a couple of touchdowns and 100-plus yards. And it got me thinking about how good can Trevor Lawrence be? And I looked up, guys, the best rookie quarterback seasons in NFL history. You know, this is subjective, obviously. But, you know, take a guess at who is listed, at least in one particular list, as having had the best rookie quarterback.
I'm going to guess it's not Marino. I wanted to say Marino. He threw 48 touchdown passes in his second year. I don't know.
Yeah. Marino's on the list, but not
Herbert's
the top.
The top is
Ben Roethlisberger in 2014, 2,600 yards, 66% completions, 13 starts, 17 touchdowns, 11.
You mean 2004.
Sorry, 2004.
I was going to say, whoa.
2004. He started 13 games, 66% completion, 17 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 144 rushing yards, which shows you that was a really long time ago. Dak Prescott in 2016 started every game, 68% of his passes, 3,600 yards, 23 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. That's damn tough to keep up with. 2016, Russell Wilson in 2012, 16 starts, every game, over 3,000 yards, 26 TDs, 10 interceptions, and almost 500 yards rushing. Cam Newton in 2011, remember how Cam Newton burst on the field? Yeah. 16 starts, 4,000 yards. 24 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, even then portending what he was going to be, and 700 yards rushing and 14 rushing touchdowns. 14. So this is a company that he is being compared to. Can Trevor Lawrence do that in Jacksonville, given the rest of the team?
It's not as likely. If he can, then obviously he vaults himself up in esteem. But I would say it's unlikely he's going to be able to come put up those kind of numbers. But I think he's going to be the pearl among the swine, if you will. You know, I think he will.
I hope he can stay healthy, Mitch. I'd like to find out. I'll just say I think he can be very, very good, even on a bad team. But I don't want him to get Joe Burrowed. We're going to talk about Joe Burrow in a couple of minutes, but just off of the games that I had seen before last night, where he did get some protection, and you know you're playing against scrubs, it doesn't matter. He was still completing passes. He was still 11 out of 12 last night, and it's a question of how much is he going to get beat up, and then it's always a question of how much that scar tissue is going to affect him going forward.
And I think that the quarterbacks who have these big rookie seasons, and it's not unusual anymore. Look at Patrick Mahomes. Technically, his rookie season was 2017, but he started one game. It was the last game of the season. He did great, but it was the last game of the season, and that was his rookie year. But 2018, which was essentially his rookie year, he started every game, threw for over 5,000 yards, had 50 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. He was 23. Trevor Lawrence is pretty close to that, right? Because he stayed a long time there. He's probably got close to 22 anyhow. But the thing is about those quarterbacks that burst on the scene, Kyler Murray, guys like that, they move. And they move around, and their heart. You know, you can't game plan against. You haven't seen enough of them. There's not enough tape on them. You're not sure what their tendencies are and where they go. And Mahomes, you know, was fantastic because of the way that he moved around in the pocket. Not necessarily just his rushing yards, although he had plenty of those, but you couldn't catch him. And Murray was similar to that. That's not Trevor Lawrence. You know, Trevor Lawrence isn't going to beat anybody with his feet in the NFL. And so, Mike, you're right. It's like, you know, then you start to worry about him getting hurt.
His comparison to me, as from the beginning, is you know, is Manning. He's the Manning facsimile. That's to me, and the Peyton Manning facsimile. He'll be 22 on October 6th, Mitch.
22. Yeah.
I'd have to look it up. I think Peyton went from 3-13 to 13-3. I think I may be wrong about that.
And guys, we all know the elephant in the room here, because the numbers, the statistical accumulation doesn't come anywhere close to any of these guys. But in terms of achievement, the gold standard of rookie quarterbacks in our time is 2001 Tom Brady. You know, so, you know, that's the standard.
But you look at this draft, Mitch, okay? So Trevor Lawrence, he's the cover boy, one. Zach Wilson's going to be thrown into it with the New York Jets, too. Trey Lance, who knows, may get thrown into it. And then Justin Fields, you know, down at the 11th pick. This was, we talked about this the other day. This was an extraordinary quarterback draft. But because Lawrence was what he was supposed to be from the first time we saw him as a freshman at Clemson, the number one pick in the draft. Remember, he's ready for the NFL right now. Okay. And because of the Urban Meyer factor, and because there will be that kind of attention on the coach as well as the quarterback, I was just happy as a football fan. I got no skin in the game with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Okay. I was happy to see him do well. I was happy to see him do well because, as Meyer said after the game, it was like controversial whether he was going to play this game. And he says, the kid's got to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, unlike the situations for the Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Staffords, where they're keeping him as far away from the field as they can.
Let's get to
you've got to give him some action, Mike. I've got this in front of me, and good call on the Peyton Manning 3-13 to 13-3 is correct.
That right? Yeah,
But look at the numbers. He started in both seasons. He started every game, so he came out of the gate and he was playing in his rookie year. He threw for 3,700 plus yards, but he had 26 touchdowns and 28 interceptions.
Yeah, yeah.
26 touchdowns and 28 interceptions. The following year, 13-3, throws for over 4,000 yards, 26 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. So he almost halves his interception rate. And I could see a scenario like that for Trevor Lawrence. It's funny when you brought that up, Bob. I thought, yeah, you know, because he throws a lot, and he's used to having his receivers, and you know, and you know, when you come from the Clemson and that kind of a program, you can throw it up, and your receiver is going to beat the defender most of the time. They're going to be faster than them, or they're going to outjump them. That's not going to be the case with the guys he's throwing to in Jacksonville, and it's not going to be the case with the defenders he's throwing against in the NFL, and he's not going to anticipate how quickly they can come up and steal a pass. So I wouldn't be surprised if his interception rate is way higher than it ends up being for his career, and he has a parallel
season. You're right. My whole comparison had to do with the physical stature, too. You know, the size. He's 6'6". He's right. Angular. He's tall. You know, he's I mean, and I agree, you pegged him completely, and that was Peyton Manning. He never beat anybody with his legs. So that's why I was using that comparison.
Hey. By the way, Mitch, when you said 26 touchdown passes and 28 interceptions, I always my favorite reference on touchdowns and interceptions. Do you know who has the sketchiest quarterback resume in the Hall of Fame? Mitch, he threw for his career, he threw nearly 50 more interceptions than he did touchdown. Wait, Mitch, 223 interceptions against 170 touchdown passes.
You could make an argument that he's in the Hall of Fame for one game for which he played a minimal role. Technically, it was, you know, the score was 16-9, and he didn't exactly have dazzling statistics in that game.
Yeah. You like that stat, Mitch?
That is it. Did he do most of that like late in his career
when he went to the Rams
and
all that,
or was he always that way?
They were bad at first, but it was a different world. What it was like? You know what it was like in those days? Strikeouts and home runs right now in baseball. You know, you were ready to fling it up there on the chance that you could throw a touchdown pass. But I'm telling you something, on the merits of his career, and Bob's right, he's in the Hall of Fame because of one game, okay? He did not have a Hall of Fame career.
Oh. Well, sometimes your spotlight can carry you further than your shadow. Speaking of quarterbacks, we do want to mention Joe Burrow. It's amazing. You know, here's a guy who's a number one pick and lived up to it. I mean, he was playing fantastic, had that terrible injury, season-ending injury, and hadn't played since that knee injury, torn ACL. It was November 22nd. The Bengals held him out of the first two preseason games, and he came out yesterday, got a standing ovation in front of the home fans. All he did was basically hand off a couple times, and I think he threw one pass. But you realize how quickly you can go from, you know, super expectations and star player to forgotten. I mean, I honestly forgot about Joe Burrow until I read this story. You know, and all the talk that we've been talking about in NFL previews, who we're looking forward to, what we're looking forward to, I forgot. And shame on me for forgetting, but that's how it happens. I'm sure fans do too. So, you know, that's what you say about Trevor Lawrence. You know, you don't want him to get hurt. You don't want one of those things that suddenly I've never been injured like this before and I don't know if I can come back from it. I sure hope Joe Burrow can.
And Mitch, you are 100% right. And I had to look it up, okay, when we were going to talk about Joe Burrow. He was playing way better because it's been so long than you remember in his rookie year. I mean, they were obviously a bad team, but he threw 13 touchdown passes against just 5 interceptions in the 10 games he played. And the only reason I've been thinking about him and been aware of him is the kid has talked about how grueling the rehab process was for him. as he tried to come back from what at the time was a catastrophic knee injury.
Absolutely.
We've got one more quarterback thing we should touch upon briefly, simply because the kid is making a great case for himself, and that is Mac Jones.
Yep.
He had a terrific game the other night. He displays great quick release, awareness, check down stuff,
movement in the pocket too, Bob. Movement in the pocket,
which he didn't have
to move in the pocket at Alabama.
It's going to be so interesting because it's clear that Cam Newton is still the apple of the coach's eye, at least publicly. He says nothing. He does nothing to change that scenario, and it's going to be interesting. And I'll say this, that their relationship is, according to Jones, is wonderful. Cam has been a mentor type. It's just a fascinating one because the kid has done nothing to harm himself, and he's done everything to win the job. And most people around here think he should win the job, but the coach, of course, was classically noncommittal yesterday.
Mitch, you said it the other day. There's a reason why he ran to the stage the night of the draft. And it wasn't because he'd fallen to whatever it was, number 15, when the Patriots took him.
No, that I'm telling you, we're going to look back on this as one of those moments that rival fans rip their hair out of. How come the Patriots always get so lucky? Or how come? And he falls to them with 15. But... you know, they could have picked somebody else. They could have said it's not worth it. There were other teams that passed on him. You give credit where it's due. If he turns out to be a great player, then if he turns out to be the star of that class, although I doubt that he's going to outshine Trevor Lawrence in the long run, but in the short run, in terms of being with a better team and a better coach, he may. And in that case, he wouldn't be any different than the guy he essentially was replacing, Tom Brady, who everybody passed on for 6 rounds. So give the Patriots credit if they found the diamond in the rough. It just feels, Bob, from afar, it just feels like he's going to end up with the job, whether he ends up with week one or not.
It just seems to the outside world, and I'm talking about the football experts, the pundits, not the fans, or even the local media. But to them, yes. But to the outside world, it seems like a given that he should be, that he will eventually, and very soon deserves to have the job, whether he will get it or not. You know, how stubborn Bill Belichick will be in his defense and clinging to Newton is the question.
Bob,
it's an interesting story.
I don't think too stubborn, because they actually look like they have a team again. They can run the ball. The defense looks way better. I think there's a part of Belichick that thinks, you know, that he's not conceding anything. And that's why I don't think you can give too many games away because of a guy, Newton, who looked like he had forgotten how to play football last year.
I get a sense of a tortoise and hare thing going on with New England and Tom Brady and Belichick and Brady. You know, Brady immediately left and immediately won a Super Bowl. I think Belichick, who's as competitive as Brady is, in his mind, he's playing the long game. So, okay, fine. Everybody's talking about how Brady, it was the right move to go, but let's see where we are 5 years from now. And, you know, when Tom Brady's retired, because he will retire eventually or get hurt or something, and I'm going to build for the future and have, you know, a new star and a new team. And I'm sure he's hoping that Mac Jones, he knows Cam Newton isn't the future of that. Whether he starts Cam Newton at the beginning or not, he knows that 3 years from now, Cam Newton's not going to be leading his team. I just don't buy it. You know, I've said it before. He is who he is. And so maybe there's more of an upside with Mac Jones. We'll see. All right, time for our parting shots.
One last thing about your old Philly Eagles, Mitch. Okay? Do you think Gardner Minshew might end up being the starting quarterback there now that they made the trade with the Jaguars?
Well, Gardner Minshew's not bad, you know.
No.
He's had some moments. We'll see. All right. This week's Parting Shots brought to you by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. Bob Ryan, lead us off.
Now, Parting Shots.
If you're a good sports fan, do yourself a favor and seek out the obit for Jerry Harkness today. The 1963 NCAA champion Loyola Ramblers were Texas Western before Texas Western, starting an then unheard of four black players, the best of whom was the 6'3 Jerry Harkness. They came from 15 points down to defeat two-time defending champion Cincinnati, with a Harkness basket getting them into overtime, where it was won on a Vic Rouse tap-in. Loyola also played a role in an historic tournament game against Mississippi State, who literally sneaked out of that segregationist state to play that game. Harkness would become lifelong friends with the best Mississippi State player, Joe Dan Gold. It's a story people need to know. Jerry Harkness was 81.
Okay, so here it is. Fans have to be vaccinated at the U.S. Open Tennis Tournament, which starts today, where only 50% of the players are. The big ad campaign they've been running about the Open, because fans are coming back this year, is the return. Well, yeah, a return to someplace that's not very smart. You need to listen to the wisdom of Andy Murray on this, however. Quote, "Ultimately, I guess the reason why all of us are getting vaccinated is to look out for the wider public," Murray said the other day. Quote, "We have a responsibility as players that are traveling across the world, yeah, to look out for everyone else as well." Murray is likely going to lose to Stefanos Tsitsipas tonight in the first round, but he still sounds like a champion that he once was in Flushing Meadow, and somebody who ought to be put in charge of this whole damn sport.
If you're wondering what all that talk about the Big Ten, ACC, and Pac-12 was all about, you're not alone. They announced some sort of alliance and then promptly ignored all details. So we still have no idea if Indiana will be playing UCLA every year, or if Duke and Michigan will be in the same conference, or if nothing will happen at all. Meanwhile, college football is about to start here in the Midwest, and guess what the Big Ten storylines are? Let's see. Ohio State is almost too good to be in this conference anymore. Michigan is still wondering if this is the year that Jim Harbaugh delivers on his promise. Michigan State still getting used to another new regime. Penn State is expected to be good, but not national championship good. Wisconsin will play defense and be pretty good, but be locked out on the outside in the end. Indiana will try to make a bigger name for itself. In other words, business as usual. Maybe when it comes to college football in the Big Ten, things stay the same, even when all there is talk about change. That's going to wrap it up for today's program. We do this every Monday and Thursday, and so we'll be back in a few days to do it again. If you like what you heard, leave us a comment or leave us a rating. We always appreciate those. Tell your friends they can find the Sports Reporters podcast twice a week on Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, any place you get popular podcasts. Till we see you again, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, Mitch Albom saying, have a great week.